This is Teddy Teapot with Teddy Mellencamp.
Hi guys, welcome to this week's Teddy Teapot. I've been missing you even though it's only been a week. I am super excited to jump into this topic today. I am here with a great friend of mine who I met in Mommy and Me. Her name is Donna Bowling. She is incredible. We are going to dig into what so many of us have been struggling with recently, which is stressing over the pandemic's effect on businesses and finances. Donna, can you tell the listeners a little bit about what you do?
Yes. Hi, Teddy.
Hi.
It's so good to see you and talk to you. So I am actually a business coach for female entrepreneurs, mostly in like the online space. And it's actually amazing because I started doing this before the pandemic, which is funny because now really everyone needs to pivot and create an online business. But this was kind of a pivot for myself since I used to be in casting. I was a casting director for about 15 years. Here in LA, and then a talent agent for kids, and worked with kids as an acting coach. And then this is how I created my business. People started asking me how I did it from home, and I started coaching people on it. So now I really, that's my jam. I help women start and develop and grow their businesses from their homes, basically.
And you guys, I have watched Donna's growth throughout and watched her pivot, and it's really been incredible. And I think the same thing goes for With All In and myself, is that the biggest key to growing your business and to pivoting and to making these shifts is by showing up and being authentic to who you are.
100%.
Because no matter what you're doing, if you don't believe in it, if you're not being honest, if you're not who you are, people are not going to trust you and they're not going to want to be in business with you. Wouldn't you say?
I mean, authenticity is probably the most important thing that I teach in terms of showing up on stories. The truth is, like when we're talking about online businesses, it's really about your personality on social media and on Instagram. It's less about your website and making sure kind of the old school version of business is set up. It's who you are. People are not buying what you're offering. They're buying from you as a person. And, you know, they're like, just like what you offer, Teddy, there's probably a lot of different kinds of weight, you know, loss or exercise methods. But the reason people come to All In is because they fall in love with you as a person. You show up every day for your people. And that's the goal, is just showing up consistently and building know, like, and trust. Know, K-N-O-W, know.
I agree. And I think also something that I did at the beginning of this pandemic. So if you are in a place where your business is, things are still going well, but you're realizing that morale is shifting, because that's definitely going to happen right now, especially for those of us who have kids. And then we find out that the school's not happening, like just so many changes. What I ended up doing was I gave every single one of my coaches a bonus. Right at the beginning. And I just said, this is to say thank you. This is just because I care about you guys. And I don't know what the future holds. I'm scared too. I don't know what this means for our business. But while I can do this, I am giving all of you a bonus. And honestly, please keep it for you. Do something you normally wouldn't do for yourself. Take this moment and feel pride that you're giving back to the people that you're working with. Because truthfully, we were all in such a place of like, feeling stuck. And that's what you work with so many people on, Donna. So I have a question for you. What would be your biggest tip for somebody who's in a place right now where they're feeling really stuck when it comes to business, whether it's stuck in a job or stuck on what to do next?
Totally. Well, first of all, I just want to say that as a leader for your team, that is so incredible, because most people during this pandemic, they just immediately pulled back, right? Like they said, like, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut your hours. I'm going to have to cut your paycheck. I'm going to have to cut. And as a leader, the fact that you showed up and gave and like poured into them set the tone probably for so many of them. So first of all, like, that's amazing. I would say if someone is feeling stuck right now, number one, give yourself a little bit of a break. Like, this is a crazy time. And I feel like it's a habit of ours. You know, you're kind of like me, Teddy, like we get up and go and we just move forward and move through. But so many people, it's something that they have to develop and learn. So I would say, be easy on yourself and small goals, small actionable goals, rather than say like, okay, today I'm going to completely cut out sugar and lose 20 pounds. Or today I'm going to start a website, a book, and a podcast. Like, that's too big. So if you just say, you know, today I think I'm going to go on a 10 minute walk, or today I'm going to just create the Instagram account. I call it a brain dump. So I put it all on a piece of paper and then you like break it down really into actionable steps, smaller and smaller steps that you can actually get done today. And then the more you get done, the more you feel less like I'm stuck, right? Because you feel proud of yourself.
That you've done. And then you start believing in yourself. And also I think oftentimes, I know for a long time I was stuck because I was scared to make a mistake.
Oh God.
And then I realized, wow, we all make mistakes, and that's part of growing and that's part of learning. And it's the only way you're going to grow a business is by making mistakes and learning from them and not being 100%. So set in your ways that you can't act like I've reached out and asked you questions before. Same for me. I think it's knowing people that are going to lift you up and want the best for you and ask them. There are oftentimes, I don't know how to, you know, when I first started, I didn't know how to scale, nor did I even want to scale because the fear of making a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so many people are so scared for two things. Number one, they're scared to fail, and they're also scared of judgment, right? So people are so scared of what others will think about if they maybe just want to create a business and they want to kind of call it out there and tell people that they're doing it. They think about that one girl from high school who's watching them on Insta stories and who's going to say, why is Susie thinking that she can, you know, create a coaching business or whatever. So there's so much fear in what other people are thinking, which by the way, I bet you know, like most people don't, well, maybe if you're on a reality show, they care about you, but most people don't really judge us the way that we judge ourselves in that way. They don't care as much about us as we think they do. And then secondly, in terms of being scared of failure, the truth is like, I welcome, and I know this is kind of a cliche thing, but I swear failing is why I've succeeded. Because if it just came easy this whole entire time, it wouldn't feel fun or a challenge. I don't mind, like I've had launches for new programs and products that just kind of flopped, right? Like they just didn't do anything. And instead of just taking that down and making me like say, that's it, I'm done. I'm throwing in the towel. It's like, okay, let me just pivot a little bit my messaging, or let me see what will work. Something is obviously not working, but it's not about me. It's not like I suck, you know?
Right. And I think complacency for me at least is where I feel my worst.
Yeah.
Like that's when I'm just sitting there going through the motions, at least if I set one new goal for myself when it comes to my business, and it can be anything, you know, like it can be, I'm going to, you know, I started setting up these learning opportunities, or I reached out to the woman that helps me run my company. And I'm like, you know, hey, Lador, what is your advice? And she's like, you know what, we should do a book club, like just little things that help build up your team so that you're connecting in more ways than just like these are our go-tos that we have to do, because that's how we get to know each other. And I think that's a huge part of creating a successful business, is really connecting with the people that you work with.
100%. I mean, growing a team is one of the hardest parts of any sort of business, is creating not only a team that's all passionate and invested in what you're doing, because it's only your baby, really. It's like your baby and you want them to care about it as much. So it really starts at the top and it has to trickle down, but doing stuff like that to connect everyone and reinvigorate people's passion. And I feel like a lot of times people do their business, or they run their jobs, or they go to their work every day and it's just kind of like the same old. It feels very, you know, kind of routine. And so that's why I love running my own business, because I can decide today, like, I'm going to start a podcast, which I literally just decided the other day. I was like, I'm going to do it, and I can do it, right? So you find things that kind of excite you when you're feeling like, another day, another same old, you know?
Yeah, I fully agree. Donna, I'm so excited to announce our first guest, which is Lynn Richardson. She has just written a book called A Guide to Creating and Balancing Multiple Streams of Income, which I think is so key right now. Lynn, is there anything you want to start off by saying as to kind of introduce yourself to our listeners?
Well, you know, I'd like to say that I feel like Noah. Noah was telling everybody it was going to rain. Nobody believed him. They were laughing at him. And then all of a sudden, the world was filled with water and they were trying to get in the ark. I have been saying for the past two decades, everybody needs a home-based business. Everybody needs a home-based business. Everybody needs a home-based business. And of course, now everybody understands that everybody needs a home-based business. And not just for the obvious reason that one stream of income is hazardous to your wealth. Right? One stream of income is totally hazardous to your wealth, but for so many other reasons. You know, we were taught to go to school, get a good education, get a good job, my grandmother, who raised me in Chicago, said, you know, go to church on Sunday, wear clean underwear in case you get hit by a bus. You know, we learned all of those things, right? But I didn't know a lot about money. So when I got off to Northwestern University, my very first week of college, I got a bunch of credit cards. I couldn't afford to pay anybody. I'm at a very expensive school on scholarship. So when the creditors would call and say, Lynn, can you borrow the money? I'd say, can I borrow it from you? You know, I had all these funny answers. I get out into the real world and my credit is jacked up and I made so many mistakes. Fast forward, I'm making lots of money. I'm married, big house in the suburbs, but guess what? I was still living check to Monday. You see, check to check is a blessing. That means you get paid on Friday. By the next payday, you're broke. But check to Monday is an entirely different game. You get paid on Friday. You have fun on the weekends. And by Monday, you're broke. And I was living that lifestyle, making $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a month, not a year, a month. And I found then that more money doesn't solve a money problem. If it did, millionaires wouldn't go bankrupt. So the one thing that we all have to learn to do is understand that there are three types of income. The first type of income is earned income. That's when you trade your time for money. It's a job. It gets taxed the highest. That's the job that you have. And I'm not saying everybody should quit their jobs, keep your job, but you need to know about the other two types of income. The second type of income is investment income from your 401k, from stocks, from investing. But the third and the biggest and the best rewarded type of income is passive income. And the number one way to create passive income is by starting a business. Why? Because the IRS loves businesses so much that they give businesses, and when I say business, I mean self-employed people. Like anybody, if you could babysit, you could do hair, you could do nails, you can be an actress, you can have your own Uber, you know, driving business. But self-employed businesses get access to over 475 tax deductions. So not only do you create another stream of income, but you get to get your money back. And what do I mean by get your money back? If you went to the grocery store and you bought $200 worth of groceries and you came home and ate those groceries, and the grocery store manager told you to come back in two weeks to get your money, you'd stop, drop, and roll and go get your money. Right. Well, that's what the IRS says when you have a business. The IRS says when you drive your car for business, when you use your computer for business, when you use your cell phone for business. As a matter of fact, the IRS says you can hire your kids to work in your business and you can pay each child up to $12,400 a year. Now that's a tax write-off to you. You get that money back and then they can go pay for their own things like school clothes and school supplies and ballet and karate and tuition and things that you could not get a tax write-off for. So having multiple streams of income is the one thing that I think people have never really been taught and don't understand. And I'm so excited about teaching people about this area so that we can have financial peace.
Lynn, I have to say, I'm just like watching you like, oh my God, you're so energetic and passionate when you talk about this, which is, I just know that you love doing this so much. You probably love teaching people all of this stuff. And I agree with you. I know Teddy agrees with you. We both own our own businesses. We're both incredibly invested in diversifying our income streams. And I think if anything taught us anything, it was this pandemic, obviously, when one, you know, salary cuts out, all of a sudden you have all this other stuff still going for you that's growing, at least for myself, probably Teddy too, probably you too, Lynn. But what about if there is someone out there who doesn't have a business yet and, you know, maybe just has a job and then something went down, right, during this entire experience, during the pandemic? What would you suggest the first thing that they should do to kind of stabilize their income and their money situation?
Well, the first thing that everybody should do is to, first of all, just gain control, keep things in proper perspective. We're used to being independent. We're used to things moving and going. But when something like this happens and income comes to a screeching halt, the very first thing we do is panic. We get anxiety. And what I say to everybody is this: first of all, take a deep breath. And I know that that sounds cliche. It's like, how is that going to get me some money? Because you need a clear head to think. Put things in perspective. As long as you have food, clothing, and shelter, then you can kind of say, let me breathe and let me think and let me do the next best thing. The next thing that you do, once you just kind of stabilize your mind and don't allow yourself to have anxiety and fear, because you can't do anything with anxiety. You can't do anything with fear. Fear isn't going to get you anywhere. You need power and you need control and you need discipline. The next thing that you do is minimize as many expenses as possible. Go through every single thing in your checking account, every single subscription. I mean, and yes, I had multiple businesses to continue to move and run. But what I did when the pandemic hit is I went through everything. I couldn't believe how many things I was spending money on that I did not use. So you want to minimize your expenses by every possible means necessary. The next thing that I would say to do is to not try to be a hero right now. Now is not the time to be a hero. We are concerned about two things, our health and our wealth. If your health is in order, then say a prayer, hallelujah. But then now you need to deal with your wealth. So you want to contact every single one of your creditors. Let them know you've been impacted by the pandemic and ask for the maximum allowable time for you to have an extension of payment or a forbearance of payment. And you want to make sure that during that time, you are still minimizing your expenses. So if your banker, if your mortgage, if your car company, if your student loan company, if they give you 6 months, now you've got 6 months to really dig in. Once you have given yourself a peace of mind, you've stabilized, you've put things in a proper perspective, you've minimized your expenses, and then you've gotten extensions on your other bills, now is the time to start thinking about how you're going to create other streams of income. And once you start to do that, I think I'm not saying that this is so super easy. I'm certainly not saying that this is like a pie in the sky and it's just so easy. But what I believe is if you keep going, if you keep moving, if you keep walking in the direction that you're supposed to walk in, then you're going to collide with opportunity. And those opportunities are going to create cash flow for you and your family.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
I mean, when you're in a panic state, you're unable to create, you're unable to grow. I know myself, when I am in my worst fits of anxiety, I'm not like, wow, how am I going to take action in my business today? Focused inward that then I can't focus on anything else. And speaking of that, a lot of what I'm hearing right now, which I've done a previous podcast on, is, divorce is up right now. You said you've been married for 24 years. Money issues between couples seems to be a big problem right now and kind of always. What tips do you have to avoid money becoming an issue in your marriage or to deal with it if it is an issue?
Well, luckily and thankfully, yes, I've been married. We just turned 25 years now, been together for 27 years. Yes, yes. Children in college, all of those things. And I've made every possible financial mistake that could be made. That's why I'm an expert. And I can help people and navigate them directly through. Yes, because I went through that. Foreclosure. I filed bankruptcy in Chapter 13. I paid that off. And then the recession of 2008 hit. I filed a Chapter 7. So I've been through all of those things. What I would say for couples is to keep the marriage about love and not make the marriage about what that love can buy or what money can buy. So for example, my husband and I love him. I love him dearly. He's like the best thing that ever happened to me. One of the best things that ever happened to me. But I don't test that love by asking him to go buy me a new fur or a new diamond ring or a new, because really those things don't matter. So on the one side, if I'm expecting certain things that money can buy, then there may be a disappointment. And on the other side, if I am expecting to deliver things that money can buy and I don't have the money to deliver it, so now I feel inadequate. Now I may have, an attitude problem now. And really it comes down to feelings of inadequacy. So when we move money out of the scenario. Now, don't get me wrong. Everybody has to work. If you don't work, you don't eat around here, okay? So everybody's got to work. But I think when we place value on these monetary things, then we interrupt the love. And the truth is, my husband and I, we've been just as happy when we had no money. It was a little stressful, but we worked together and we used our energy to make our future what we want it to be, as opposed to blaming each other. Which leads me to the second thing. Blame. I think oftentimes when couples experience a financial setback, one person in the marriage or one person, in the partnership tends to blame the other. And let me tell you, I was the one to blame. I made all the mistakes in my marriage. I made all the financial mistakes. But let me tell you what gave me hope. And let me tell you what actually reinforced my commitment to fix it and get it right. It was my husband. He was patient. He was patient. And he was much more concerned about my sanity. He was much more concerned about my good health. He was much more concerned about me being here than lamenting over the mistakes that I had made. So, you know, I just say to people, I think times like this really show us the value of life. It shows us the value of relationship. And now is a great time to go back and revisit those things that you enjoyed in the other person. Look at those things that you want from a relationship and find out how you can work together to get from one step to the next.
Something I just saw that was incredible is you immediately took ownership for something that you said, you know, like I was the one to blame. Were you always of that mindset? Because I know sometimes in business, if I'm like in that place where I'm trying to grow to the next level, like sometimes my husband will have a good point or a good idea or like some way to help me. And I'm like a little defensive about it. Like, I'm like, okay, you know, I got it. You know, like I'm unable to fully open up and take in that information. Were you always like that? Or are these things that you taught yourself through time?
You know, these are things that I taught myself through time. And unfortunately that I taught myself through suffering. So suffering happens when we don't face the truth. And the truth is, I was the cause of my money problems. The truth is, I was the cause of whatever it is that I thought was going wrong. And after years of pointing the finger, after years of blaming other people, after years, the truth is, you still have to look at yourself. And I think each and every one of us, the same way we have a gut instinct about another person, or the same way we have a gut instinct, you know, this person over here may not be right. There's a friend who's a little shady. There's a guy or a girl that you don't think is. Let me tell you, we all have a gut instinct about ourselves. And I think when we either hit rock bottom or we get tired of ignoring that gut instinct about ourselves, then we're forced to kind of face the truth. Then we look around at the people who are in our circle, the people who love us. That could be a spouse, that could be a very good friend, it could be a parent, it could be a childhood friend, and that person is going to tell you the truth. And let me tell you, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. It's going to make you mad. Let me tell you, I sound all motivational right now, but if somebody came and told me something right now that I don't want to hear, I'm going to get an attitude. But then once you have the attitude, now you're sitting there with your attitude. And you can't buy anything with your attitude. Your attitude ain't going to get you anywhere. Your attitude ain't going to get you. So then you're looking at yourself. You're like, attitude. Now, come on, attitude. And so you finally kind of have to admit to yourself, okay, you know you need to do this right. But then you don't want anybody telling you you have to do it. That's ego. So that's the process that we go through. And, you know, we can laugh about it, but in those moments, we're not really happy with ourselves or anyone else. And so myself, when I get sick and tired of myself, then I know it's time for a change. So I think it's important to just be aware of that and then try to work through it as we try to get to the next step.
I love that. Do you just really fast? What if people struggle with money, talking about money and like their money mindset, like they're scared to look at their own bank account or whatever? Do you have any like really quick tips for someone to just kind of rip off that Band-Aid and accept and like go into their bank account and look at what they're spending their money on?
Very quickly. One, you cannot fix what you will not face. Two, money is an exact science. It's the most dependable thing that exists. You cannot depend on people. You cannot depend on feelings and emotions. You can't even measure people. You can't even measure feelings and emotions. Can you tell me how much joy I have? Can I tell you how much joy you have? Can I tell you how any emotion you can? But you can dictate what happens with numbers, because I say nobody has a money problem. Everybody who has a money problem actually has a math problem. And that's 1 + 1 = 2. And if your stuff adds up to 10, it'll never get into 2. Now, it's all that stuff that we're attached to that we don't want to get rid of. But the truth is, if we face it, we can fix it.
Oh, so good.
I know, so good. And I have another question. This is a little selfish on my behalf. So before the pandemic, I had recently launched retreats, which I know a lot of people, you know, they've been very popular within the last couple of years. You know, I know you host wealth retreats. I was hosting health retreats. How have you pivoted during this time with that, giving, you know, your clientele the same type of information that they need right now, but without having those in-person events?
Well, you know, I get these invitations all the time from my colleagues, business partners, whether it be an event, a retreat, and I say, I'll see you on Zoom. Let's get together for cocktails. I'll see you on Zoom with my cocktail. Hey, let's get together. I will see you on Zoom for the event. And so I think right now we have an opportunity to just be a little more intentional, a little more strategic. I've hosted all day Saturday schools right here live, virtually on the internet, and people stay, they stay engaged. So I think it just requires that we be a little more intentional. We pay a little more attention to detail. But at this end of the day, we want people to walk away from a feeling that they have when they come to an experience. And I think that that experience and that feeling can be had whether we're alive in person or whether we're working together, you know, over Zoom or some other kind of virtual method.
Well, I can tell you, you've made me feel alive right now and feel really good. And I am so grateful. I know Donna is as well, because you've lit up our Zoom. So I appreciate that. And where do people find out more information from you, and if they have questions or anything like that?
The best place to go is asklynn.org. If you go to asklynn.org, submit an inquiry, you'll get an immediate reply, and then you'll have all kinds of things that you can ask about, whether it be buying a home, foreclosure, bankruptcy, investing, starting a business, preparing for retirement, whatever it is, we've got it there. So I'm very excited, and thank you so much for having me.
Perfect. Don't be surprised if I'm sliding into your DMs.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much.
Thanks. All right. So our next guest, Jean Chotsky. I can't even believe she's coming on. I'm so excited. She is the founder and CEO of Her Money Media. She also has a podcast called Her Money. Who doesn't love that? And she is an award-winning editor. She's been on everything from like NBC Today, Oprah, AARP. I have so many questions for her, and I'm sure you do as well, Donna.
Beyond.
Hi, Jean. Thanks for joining Teddy Teapod.
I am so excited to be here with you. You know, you and I share something in common. What? Bloomington, Indiana.
Is that where you're from?
I grew up in many, many places, but I went to Binford Junior High School in Bloomington, Indiana, and first year of high school there. My dad taught at the university, so we were there for about 5 years.
Oh, wow. That is so crazy. Such a small world.
Such a small world.
So we're small town girls.
Exactly. Many small towns in my case.
I love that. Well, thank you for coming on and talking to us about, you know, all things finance, money. So many people are struggling right now. And so that's why I really am curious, like, because so many people are going to lose federal enhancement on their unemployment. What is the first thing they should be looking at to cut back on to save money, in your opinion?
I think before they look to cut back, they should look at where their money's actually going. So during this time when the unemployment benefits have been coming in and when we've all been stuck at home, we've been spending a lot less than we were spending before. We've been saving a much, much bigger percentage of our disposable income. And I think it has taught us all a lot about where we really need to spend money and where we don't need to spend money. So before you try to make any wholesale cuts, I would say, take a good look at where your money's gone for the last month. Just look at, very few of us have been spending cash because we're not out in the world spending cash. So look at where you've made online purchases, look at where you've used your credit card, try to get a sense of your subscriptions, you know, really lay it out and then look at thinking about, okay, could I tweak this? Could this be a little bit lower? Could I spend a little less here? I mean, I think that we have learned such amazing skills that we should try our best to hold on to. You know, for the first time ever, I think a lot of us are not going to the grocery store every day. We're going week, right? And that is forcing us to meal plan. It's forcing us to actually make a list and say, okay, this is what we're eating on Sunday. We're going to eat it again on Tuesday in tacos. And, you know, it's it's fabulous. We just have to keep going.
I know. I'm also a little bit crazy in the same way, because I'll see my husband like mindlessly grabbing stuff. I'm like, that has to last us. What are you doing?
I know.
You need to actually be hungry to be doing that.
I know. And I think there's definitely a line between hoarding and buying the right amount of stuff, right? Like I walk down my street and I see some of my neighbors' garage doors open and the paper towels stacked to the ceiling. And I just think, oh, please. But having a couple of packages of, you know, chicken in the freezer so that you can just pull them out, make dinner. I've been going to the farmer's market once a week or once every 2 weeks and just loading up on veggies. And I cook the ones that are going to go bad first, and I cook the ones that have a longer shelf life later. It's made my life a lot easier and cheaper.
And a way to like also support local businesses. I've been doing like the fresh to farm organic delivery. And that's been so huge. And now all of a sudden we're trying foods that we had completely forgotten about.
I know. I mean, I got good at beans and then I got sick of beans, but I've been grilling so many things. I've been grilling salad. I'm having fun with my cooking for the first time in a long time. I mean, I'm not having fun on the scale, but I am having fun.
I'm not having fun with the dishes.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you, Jean, randomly. I feel like, number one, your voice is so familiar to me, just because I was just saying that, like, I listened to you so many years, like on the Today Show and whatever. So I love your voice. I feel like, you know, when you're going through our day feeling kind of down or, you know, wanting something exciting, it's like, I go to Amazon, right? Mm-hmm. I'm always on Amazon. I'm like, what can I do? I think I'm going to buy a new bikini that no one's going to see.
Right.
I feel like I'm constantly making random purchases. Are you feeling like a lot of people are doing that? They're shopping kind of mindlessly and for things that they don't really need right now?
Yeah, I think impulse purchases are making us feel better. You know, they're making us feel a little bit more normal. And I'm guilty of it too. I've just started, I will do the shopping and not the buying. So I kind of find if I go online and I put things in my cart and then I just leave, I don't really need them. I don't want them. I certainly don't have anywhere to go. But I get that little kick of doing it. And then, you know, if there's something that I keep thinking about, like there was a somersault bathing suit, like that is one of those things that, right, that I actually will wear that, right? That I am wearing bathing suits and shorts more this summer. And I kept thinking about it and thinking about it. And finally, I just went back and bought it.
Yeah.
But it, you know, I knew that that was pretty high on my list.
Yeah. What's one thing that people are doing with their money, or maybe they've always done this, or maybe more now than ever, that you wish they would stop?
Ooh. Well, right now they're doing, I mean, we're seeing more and more people trading kind of actively. I think we're seeing people getting some of that high that they might have gotten, you know, if there are people who like gambling, we're seeing a lot of that morph into day trading. And I worry about the young people who have gotten on Robinhood and are just trading stocks like it's easy. I mean, everybody's a genius trader when the markets are going up. It's when the markets are going down that you realize you've got a problem. So I wish people would be a little more planned in general and cautious about the way that they're investing.
Mm-hmm. Right. And for me, little things have been adding up, like subscription purchases that I like didn't even realize. So like I had downloaded the Calm app, but I wasn't using the Calm app anymore. I started using Headspace. And like, I recently went through my like iTunes, like family sharing. And I was like, this is obscene. The amount of things I don't even realize that I'm paying for every month.
I know. And you're not alone. So statistically, the average family has 21 subscriptions.
Crazy. Like,
wow. What? Right. But I did the same thing. I mean, I need to get back on Headspace, but I've gone through and looked at these different subscriptions, and some of them were things that my kids signed up for that I didn't even realize. I was still paying for GoGo Wi-Fi, right? The airplane Wi-Fi from the travel that I stopped doing 6 months ago. It took me a few months to catch up with that one and cancel it.
And the ones that get you the most is especially right now, because like I let my kids have tablet time for an hour a day from 4 to 5, and which some people are against, but whatever it may be. But now they have learned, even though I've put all these passwords, to download their own games. And all of a sudden I'm getting charged for games I never even heard of. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like, I'm like, what, how are you breaking the system? So I think it's also really monitoring our family too.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding. My next door neighbor, her son actually spent hundreds of dollars on in-app purchases last month on Xbox.
It happened to me.
It did.
Yes. All of a sudden my husband was like, Dylan, like he got a notification that there was a $129 purchase on an app store. And my son didn't, he's seven. He didn't know he was doing it. He was buying diamonds for something, like for a game.
Yeah. The extra lives, right? That mean nothing, but you think they mean something because you just, you're in the zone. So yeah, you're absolutely right. We have to watch our kids.
I have a subscription to a wine company that I have so much wine in my fridge. Like I can't keep up, but I'm scared to like get rid of it because I love it. And I don't want to, you know, it's like we all have our thing, right?
Yeah. Which one do you have?
I was doing Wink for a long time, but now I'm really into dry farm wines.
Oh, all right. I have Naked Wines and I like that one.
I feel like it's the organic healthy wines. Teddy, get on board with the healthy ones.
I'll be having a wine subscription. We'd be having a whole different podcast if that was the case. What would be like your biggest piece of advice for anybody right now, financially struggling, financially trying to, you know, build up their business or start a business, or that's feeling stuck in this moment?
Okay. So two things. For the feeling stuck part, I don't think the focus should be on solving the problem as much as just taking a step, right? When we look at resilience, which I think is the thing that we all really, really need right now, the way to get more resilience is to just do something and to acknowledge that you're putting yourself in motion. You're that snowball rolling down the hill. You're going to pick up speed. You're going to pick up momentum and you'll probably go wildly off course, but that's okay. You'll right your ship. You just have to start. And that's true of your finances too. If you've never looked at your finances, if you are feeling out of control, just get honest with the numbers. Just do that assessment that I was talking about before, but not just of your spending. Look at what you earn, what you own, and what you owe. And over time, you want to see the amount you're earning going up steadily. You want to see the amount you own going up. So the assets in your retirement account and in your savings. And you want to see the amount that you owe going down, with the exception of making a large purchase like a house. But if you can sort of get a grip on those things, then you'll feel more calm. You'll feel a little bit less chaotic. And then you can dig into the spending if you want to dig into it and be a little more planful about that too.
Yeah.
Oh, such a good idea. Planning, being aware, and actually knowing what you're doing with your money. It's a crazy concept that most of us try to avoid.
Yeah, we're scared of it.
Yeah. We stick our heads in a hole. We don't want to look because we don't want to see what we've done in the past, right? But can't change what we did in the past. I mean, you can return a few things, but can't return everything. And we go forward tomorrow. I mean, I got divorced at 40. I pretty much started over at that point. And I'm 55, I'm doing fine. And I think everybody has the ability to do that.
I know. We all have the ability to do fine and to be do better than fine and to feel our best. It's whatever works, you know, best for us. So thank you so much, Jean. You made us laugh. You gave us some great tips. I am so grateful to you for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And now I'm going to go buy another bathing suit at Sweet Solid or Summer Solid or whatever.
And the next time you guys see me, I'm going to have 1,000 wines in my fridge.
There you go. We'll drink together.
There you go.
Cheers, ladies.
Bye.
Bye.
So we've talked a lot to business consultants and how to grow your business, but I also want to talk to some small businesses and kind of dig into how they've pivoted, what they've done to keep themselves, you know, alive during this time, especially the touch business. So let's bring on Kate Somerville and dig into her a little bit. As I said, you guys, I am totally fangirling over having Kate Somerville on. Kate Somerville is the trailblazer of like prestige skincare. She opened up in 2004 and is known as the guru of glow among all the celebs, entertainers, and other high profile personalities. So I really want to ask her how she's pivoted, things that she's working on right now, and how she's keeping her business thriving during this time because they're completely closed. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I am sitting here feeling so great because I was having some major mastectomy and then you sent me over some products and now I'm already clearing right up. I was like,
oh, good.
It worked overnight. I cannot.
Well, good. I'm glad it worked.
So we're talking today about like business during the pandemic. And I think your businesses, skincare, hair salons, any of those type of places have really had to, shift their, what they're doing right now because so many places have closed and then opened and then closed again. What are some tips that you could give some people that are in your industry that are listening?
Well, it's tough right now, especially if you're in touch industry. You know, what's saved me so much is having the product line. But we've had to pivot because our top vendors have been Sephora and Nordstrom's, of course. And so we've had to really focus on digital and really speaking to our customer. And our clinic, unfortunately, hasn't been able to open. The numbers are just not going into the right way. And it's just too dangerous. And so, our team has completely done an awesome job of refocusing on our communications and our sales through digital means and social media and things of that nature. So we are really blessed because, for so many years, I just had the clinic and I thought to myself, can you imagine where I would be, and so many of my colleagues, that rely on touch services are hurting, and it's scary. But we did a donation to help a lot of the beauty individuals, so we're doing everything that we can because right now we're stable, thank God, as far as the product line is concerned.
And you guys launched a brand new product right at the beginning of this, right?
We did. And, it came at the right time. And I obviously didn't time this, but, you've been into our clinic on Melrose Place. And, we do a lot of lasers, a lot of peels there. And we also have seen a lot more people come in with sensitized skin, meaning that they've overdone it maybe with retinols or peels. They're using way more products on the skin. So they're kind of compromising their skin barrier. And through this pandemic, it's super important to keep your skin barrier healthy. Because what we know through John Hopkins is the virus cannot penetrate healthy skin. So this line is called Delicate, and that's exactly what it is. It's really to have the skin rebound by using, it's three products. It's a cleanser, it's a serum, and a moisturizer. And basically what it does is it creates this barrier over the skin to allow the skin to heal. So it has a lot of ceramides, omegas, peptides that help with inflammation. It's been our biggest launch to date, which is so crazy because, retail is a lot of it is shut down. But we were able to get that message out. And we also donated. So I don't know if you know that. Well, you do know this because you've been to the clinic, but four of my nurses that are in the clinic are on the front lines. They're in the hospitals. And they were telling me early on, Kate, we have no PPE. It's so dangerous in the beginning. And so quickly, our clinic donated everything that we had in our clinic to them and the hospitals. And then what was happening, they were working 16, 18 hour days, and their poor faces had these like, you know, sores. And so I asked the team, is there a way that we could donate to the healthcare workers to really help prepare their skin barrier, because they're obviously way more susceptible to getting the virus because they're exposed to it, and these masks are really digging into their skin. And so my team was so awesome. They quickly moved. We donated 60,000 products to healthcare workers around LA and actually around the country. And so we're super proud of that. And, you know, so we're just doing everything that we can. I just feel blessed this product launched when it did, because it's all about protecting the skin barrier. And we're donating that, a lot of these products. In fact, we went out of stock, but we're back in stock, but we wanted to donate to the people that are saving lives.
And for those who aren't in the same kind of, you know, situation as you, where they don't have as long of a history and their names aren't out there, would you say like the actionable skills would be, you know, listen to the people that you're working with, lean into products right now, since you'd be doing touch surfaces?
So we're doing a lot of consultations online. So we're still keeping in contact with our customer and our client. So those estheticians or hairdressers, a lot of my friends that are really great hairdressers, they're putting together color kits for their clients and kind of zooming and showing them how to do it. So it's kind of unique in that one of the guys that I know is actually making more by putting kits together for his clients than he did when he was actually in the salon. So there's ways to pivot. And I always just tell my team, okay, we've been through the writer's strike, which was one of the toughest things for my clinic, believe it or not, in Hollywood, because everybody really stopped coming. And then we went through the recession in 2008 and 9/11. And so we've been through a lot of storms, and I'm like, okay, it's time to hunker down right now. And then, you know, look to ways to still stay in contact with your base. And so that's how I would do it. And also, you know, you could customize a facial for them, send them products, that kind of thing.
I feel,
go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to say that a lot of my clients come to me that are hairdressers. They're in the touch industry. And actually, Kate, my mom was an esthetician my whole life here in LA.
Oh, well, look at your skin. That's beautiful.
Well, that's because of my mom. She was like, Donna, you've got it. But I feel for you, because I understand how it's so out of your control when you feel like what your job is and what your passion in your industry is touching people, right? So like being right in their faces. Thank God you have this amazing line. But for a lot of my clients, I offer that they teach, that they give also education, like pivot to creating maybe some digital courses or online webinars. You know, one of my friends is a big makeup artist here in LA. Yeah. And you guys probably know her, Jamie Greenberg. And she is, she's teaching classes. So she's teaching how to do the perfect cat eye or whatever. So she's finding ways to still bring income in and impact without actually touching people, right?
Yeah, this is gonna change our industry a lot. I think too, when we were right about to open, we found ourselves, okay, how do we keep our clients safe now? Which I think is going to carry through for us. Like, you know, we had to take all linens out of the room. We had to put in air filters. We had to figure out how, for PPE, for us, how are we going to do our job with all this stuff on us now? And so I think the industry, there's so much need for now pivoting. And so figuring out, you know, what it is that you can do to make a difference in this climate, because this climate is I think, not going to change, right? Even when we get a serum, I think now people are going to be like, oh, I need to be more careful. So now changing our businesses, you know, to accommodate that, I think is going to be really important.
I agree. And I mean, I've even noticed that my self-care has changed now that I can't be going in for facials. Like all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I need to start taking better care of myself.
Yeah.
And so I am going to, you know, I'm looking at your guys' Instagram. I'm looking to, you know, find out how to do it. So I think it's so key to just listen to your clientele on what we need, you know, so no matter what business you're in, because then you're able to give back, you're able to help, and you're also able to stay in business.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And also, you know, my whole goal always, you know, is I've learned a lot being in a medical facility, in a medical clinic. So my job was to say, and I was also on QVC for 12 years. And so I was like, when I went into retail, I'm like, how am I going to give this kind of service and result without downtime safely? To the clients outside of my clinic. And that's what I've tried to do. So like our Dermal Quench product really came from the idea of my Dermal Quench treatment that's an oxygen treatment. So like I've really tried to take that level of result into the home. And so this is just another one of those opportunities to really teach that, you know, because we're presented with, okay, we've got to do it online. We've got to do it digitally without touch right now.
Yeah. And at different price points.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. My God.
Thank you so much, Kate. Where do people book virtual consultations with you guys and whatnot?
So you can go to katesomerville.com and it'll prompt you through where to do a consultation. The consultations are with our nurses at the clinic, with our estheticians. And so they'll build a program for you. And when we're back, we'll be able to teach you about new things, because that's the cool thing. This has given us an opportunity to find some new things and, you know, expand our facial treatment services. And we also did a remodel. So that came at the right time, because now things are a lot more sterile and streamlined in the clinic. So, but katesomerville.com, we would love to give you a consultation and get you on the path to beautiful, healthy skin.
Thank you so much, Kate. I hope to see you in person.
I know. Soon. I would love that too.
'Guys, we are so excited to bring on our next guest. Her name is Melissa Sigg, and she's a co-owner of the Tahoe Art House and Cinema, which was a movie theater that at the beginning of COVID was donated an outdoor movie screen, correct?
It was not the beginning of COVID. It was basically kind of at the end of the quarantine period when we realized we were going to have to pivot, that the movie theater probably was not going to be allowed to open for many months. So that's why we decided to do a drive-in.
And how is that going so far? Has it been about the same level of income, or has there been a shift as well?
There's a big shift, actually. It's not the same. Our theater has 100 seats, and we sell beer and wine. And usually in the summer, we're doing 3 shows a day. So if we have a big popular movie, we could be seeing up to 300 people a day. With the drive-in, we were doing about 22 cars. So that's about, you know, usually 2 people per car. Sometimes there's more. So we're, you know, we're about cutting our numbers in half. And we're only doing 1 movie a day because we have to wait for it to be dark. And we can't sell beer.
I was just about to ask, because I'm sure a lot of your sales were in alcohol. So you can't sell that at all, even for passengers.
You can't have open containers of alcohol in your car in the state of California. So people are allowed to come to we have a little courtyard outside our theater, and they can have a drink there. But we can't promote it inside the cars.
Has it changed by what type of movies you're showing? Like, do you have more if it's a kids movie or like an action movie, or like what are the type of movies that you're promoting right now?
Yeah, well, definitely, as you know, there are no new releases in Hollywood and they keep getting pushed back. I don't foresee any new releases for actually many months. So we decided, because the drive-in is kind of an old school vibe, we've been going kind of popular 80s movies. Mm-hmm. We started off with Close Encounters of the Third Kind. We've done a lot of Spielberg movies because he was like the star of the 80s. We've done Raiders of the Lost Ark. We did Ferris Bueller. This weekend we're doing Footloose. So we just kind of have to reach into the vault, and we can only do older movies.
If you do Girls Just Want to Have Fun, I'm driving up there right now.
That is a good idea. I'm going to write that one down. I like that.
I feel like there is something so kind of cool and old America feeling of a drive-in. I remember going to a drive-in when I was a kid. Like, I remember just only once, but you have to air Grease. I feel like that's a drive-in movie, is Grease, right?
Yes, you're the second person who suggested that.
When you like look around at what you've kind of pivoted to, obviously you have two choices, right? You either completely shut down or you do this. So this is clearly a better choice, I think, than shutting down. Is there anything that you can think of maybe that you have been able to upsell? Are you charging more for the tickets? Are you offering something else as a product?
Yeah, so how it works, so our normal ticket price for the theater was $12. We actually did raise it $1.50. We were open for about 2 weeks this summer, that's it. Mm-hmm. Our drive-in ticket is $35, which includes two people and two concession items, because we wanted to be sure that we could sell our concessions. And then extra people are $5. So that makes the ticket price about $12.50. So it's about the same as inside the theater.
Got it.
And I have one last question. I know we have to break. Sure. But how do you guys deal with like the restroom situation? Because that's, you know, right now that's been my concern.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, our drive-in is in the parking lot where our theater is located, so our lobby is open so people can use the bathroom, but we do have strict rules. You have to wear a mask, you have to sanitize before you go inside, and we only let one person or one family unit in the bathroom at a time.
Wow, very smart. So yeah. Where do people find out what movie you're playing next, and when do Donna and I drive down to see Girls Just Want to Have Fun?
Our website is TahoeArthouseCinema.com. and has a listing of all our upcoming drive-in movies, and advance tickets are required, so you can purchase tickets there. And we welcome suggestions for movies, so anyone can email us and say, hey, I have a great idea.
Awesome.
Perfect. I love that. So fun and such a good idea.
So fun.
Yeah, people seem to be enjoying it. They love like the nostalgia. People feel safe outside and in their cars, and it's something for the whole family to do.
Totally.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
Wow. I learned so much today, Donna. Did you?
It was beyond. I feel like I'm in school.
I feel like, one, I need to immediately like get on my all-in boxer chains and start going to town, making some more changes. But guys, I truly think that this is so huge. Whether you have a business right now that's successful, or you're thinking about starting a business, or you have a business that's struggling, the word of the day was pivot. And another thing that every single person said was, listen.
Yeah.
Now is the time to listen. Listen to your audience, listen to the people you follow on Instagram, ask questions, lean in, and really figure out what the people want and how you can help them. Because if you're helping somebody, it's going to light that fire inside of you, and you're going to want to make bigger changes. Donna, you are helping people make such big changes. Where do they find more information from you?
Thank you so much. Well, I live on Instagram. I'm there all day long, all the time. It's at Donna, which is spelled D-A-N-A, at donna.coaching or donnabowling.com.
Oh, well, thanks you guys so much. I thank you for listening to Teddy Teapot this week, and send us in an email and let us know next topics you want us to talk about.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe to Teddy Teapot on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.